They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Our best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, everybody, welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. As always, like the opener says, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. I am joined today by the one and only stat man, Russ Ivanek. Now, Russ, our opener says the view from our couch is pretty good, but I wouldn't know. It seems like every time a sporting event's on, I have to sit in a little radio studio with a tiny little TV watching this crap.
Damn you trying to make a living and have a job.
This is so stupid. This is ridiculous. Just give me a pile of money and let me sit at home and watch sports. That's all I want.
Yeah. Why isn't that just a thing? Yeah. I mean, who believes in paying for food?
I don't. Give me that shit for free. How you doing today, buddy?
Doing all right, man. It's been an interesting week, and excited where we're at on some of these series.
Oh yeah, this is gonna be a fun show. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of different things. We're gonna end the show in the way that Russ and I have quietly been having this conversation for the last 10 years. We just now decided to put it on. And that's debating some guys that, are they Hall of Famers or not? Whether they're, we don't really have anybody that's already in the Hall of Fame, but these are guys that are either still playing, retired, but they're bubble guys. Like, you can make the case either way, and we're gonna finally put it to rest for some of these. Because a few of these guys we have been debating for a very long time. So, it should be fun. If you're still listening, you'll notice that I have not intro'd Justin Marcus. He's busy putting Miracle-Gro on his head, hoping some hair will come back.
Oh, hey now.
He's doing some adult things. He's got some stuff with the house. He's got to make it, you know, nice. So, no Jay today. We're hoping maybe a little later he might be able to tag in. If he can, we'll be happy to have him. If he can't, it is what it is. We've done it, but we've done this just you and I before, Russ. We can do it again. It'll be fine.
I think I can.
I do believe. All right, well, let's lead this off. Kind of a recurring trend. We seem to be talking about the NBA and the NHL because, oh, wait, it's the only thing going on in sports right now. So
never mind baseball season.
Dude, honestly, I'd be lying if I said I've seen 5 games this year. It's really been a rough year for me to try to get into baseball. I mean, once everything's over and there's nothing to watch, I'll probably watch some baseball just to have sports, but I can't lie, man. There's just not a lot grabbing me with this baseball season.
Well, no, and I'd argue the single best way to watch baseball is while you're doing something else.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the real market for it. So it's, it'll be interesting come October, so I'll pick it back up then.
I mean, it's an amazing game, and we both played the game growing up. I love playing the game of baseball.
I love playing it, absolutely.
Love it. But 9 innings watching someone else do it it's tough. It can be, especially if it's a lot of, strikeouts and pop-outs. It's like, hey, there's nothing really going on here. So we'll see what happens with it. But we've been talking basketball. We've been talking hockey. Where these series are, they're wrapping up. They appear to be wrapping up. And we want to go through and talk about it. So St. Louis leads the series 3-2 over the Boston Bruins. I'm happy about it. I think you are, too. I know Jay's not too happy about it. But something I wanted to talk about was, in this series, as we've watched it, has there been maybe one or two players for you that have just stood out as the difference makers when it comes to St. Louis and Boston in this Cup series?
Well, I mean, I think the easy one is Rask.
Okay.
He's kind of been this series might be over already, the one with Rask. I'll say it that way.
Yeah.
No goalie in these playoffs has a higher save percentage than him who's started more than one game, and he has not had a single game where he's been under a 900 save percentage. For context, Binnington has had 6 of those. Right? This is unprecedented, consistent excellence from Rask. And if Boston manages to come back and win it and he doesn't get the Conn Smythe, abolish the Conn Smythe. It's runaway him. He is the hero. But I think there's some other guys that we could talk about, too, if we want to dig a little deeper.
Okay, that's fair. I would agree. Tuukka, I agree with you in that this series is over if Tuukka Rask doesn't be Tuukka Rask. As you know, he's been a great goalie for a long time. Last night as I was putting this together, I was kind of looking through it, trying to, figure out who do I like where. And this might be the easiest pick on earth, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong about it, but for me, it's Ryan O'Reilly.
He was on my short list. That's
guy
a
has 5 goals and 13 assists in the playoffs. He's got 3 goals, 1 last night, and 2 assists. He's playing really good at the right time. I mean, that's what you want from a player like that. You want someone who, when the playoffs comes around, they hit their stride and they start playing great, because that's how you win Stanley Cups. We would know about that. We've seen a couple guys in our day in the Red Wings do that exact thing, hit their stride and get going. I mean, Johan Franzen still has a contract because of it, and he hasn't played hockey in a decade.
R.I.P. brain trauma.
Yeah.
that's a really good point, and kind of to play into that, he's typically more of a defensive center, right? Probably one of the top 5 defensive centers in the league, but wasn't really shining the first 3 games, got shifted to more of an offensive role in game 4, and he has 3 goals since. Mm-hmm. But yes, he has been a big driving difference in these last 2 games, and a big part of why St. Louis has the lead in series.
Oh, absolutely. And that to me is what you're going to kind of need. Like, when you look at this, Boston's got a lot of good offensive talent that you can list off. I'm not saying that St. Louis doesn't, but when you start stacking them up, you know, you seem to notice a lot leaning on the Boston side. And then you also have to go against a very good goalie who you just previously mentioned. So for someone to come into this series when you already kind of are the underdog to it and be able to just keep going, keep pushing, and be that guy who we can kind of go, all right, Ryan's going to do something for us. He's going to get a point here somewhere. It's just a matter of where. Let's work around him. Let's make this happen. And they're 1 game away from winning a Stanley Cup. So, and they're a team that no one thought was going to win a Stanley Cup. So it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, it is. And speaking of big thing, another hero nominee would have been the Zombie Mountain version of Chara.
Yeah.
Literally can't speak. It's just this silent monster glaring at people. It's something else to come back and try and play with a broken jaw. It takes a lot of heart.
It does. Now, listen, that does take a lot of heart, too, but to be fair, I've been watching Zdeno Chara for about the last 8 or 9 years, like actually watching him, keeping tabs on him. Other than when he's getting in Sidney Crosby's face, I don't genuinely believe he can speak at all. I think he just sits there and grunts. I think he's kind of like the mountain. I think he just grunts. Yeah. I think he just grunts, because this dude is, he's a beast. He really is. I mean, anyone that's 7 feet tall on skates is already tough to deal with. But then you factor in put in the fact that he broke his jaw and he's out on the, you know, he's back out there 20 minutes later and plays in the next game. You know, most anyone else would, you know, they'd be done for the series. They'd be sitting down. I mean, we got guys in the basketball series who, like, they have a little sprained ankle and they're out for the series, yet Zdeno Chara's jaw is not right and he's still trying to play the game. So it's fair.
It's unreal. And can we talk about what in the hell was Shen shooting at that caught Chara in the face?
Yeah, I don't know about that one. The
crossbar is 4 feet off the ice.
Yeah, you were 3 feet too high.
Yeah, and a while out, they were out by the circle. If that goes on its trajectory, that's probably hitting someone in the 20th row.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I've heard on just trying to get it on, you know, get a shot on and all that, but you weren't even trying to get a remote shot on.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I honestly didn't see the play until later, so to try to put together his thinking at the time, because, of course, I only saw a little snippet of it. I didn't really see the full play. But that, to me, didn't even look like trying to just dump the puck in and, you know, chase on. So I don't really know. But the fact that you were 3 feet or 3 or 4 feet too high and you weren't exactly on unless he could somehow hit the curveball of shots.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like a whiffle ball.
I don't think he's got a JV curveball for his shot. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, that Chara has to be on this list, because if Boston's going to turn this around and win the next 2 and take it out, Chara, they're going to have to rally on the Chara story of, look, if this guy can come out here with his jaw wired shut and play, I think we can handle the bruised elbow or the sore leg. So we'll see what happens with it. But I think that, you know what, I think St. Louis has taken the punches. They've rolled through it, and I think they've got a lot of momentum going into this next game. And I'm confident. I think they're going to close it out. I don't think we see a Game 7. Would a Game 7 be fun? Yeah, we love Game 7s, but I just don't think we see it. I think Boston threw their best punches literally. At St. Louis. And St. Louis came out on the other side. I think that Cinderella story we talked about like last week, when you're talking about Vegas last year and St. Louis this year, I think St. Louis is going to take that next step. They're going to win that cup, and they're going to, you know, they're going to be the big story. And I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a good one.
I'm 100% with you. This will be the curtain call for John Hamm's silky scarves that he keeps wearing all these games. One more game, one more win.
Yeah, I want Pam Beasley to get a cup. I really want Pam Beasley to get a cup. So
I do love how Jenna Fischer has come out in strong support. And it's weird how we haven't heard at all from one Mr. Helpert here.
Yeah, that's true. He's kind of, I think he knows he's beaten. He's kind of silencing it up a little bit. That's fair. Huh. But
yeah, he did the whole back and forth thing before the series started and just completely dropped off.
Yeah, but see, you know what Helpert's going to do. He's a Boston guy. He's clear, in case anybody's missing this, we're talking about John Krasinski from The Office, Jim Helpert character. He's just sitting there staring at that picture of Tom Brady with six rings on his finger, and he's probably got a nice little bottle of something next to him that he's enjoying that picture to. That's the end story for Boston fans, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. Boston's had a lot of success in sports over the last, you know, decade. We talked about it last year on the show. Is Boston the best sports town? You have the Red Sox, you have the Bruins, the Patriots, and the Celtics, and they've all won titles in the last decade. It's a very successful sports town. So Boston can kind of sit back and enjoy what they already have and consider everything else just icing on the cake. But yeah, I am surprised there's not a little more back and forth, because it's not an over series. I think if Boston wins the next one and we go to seven, I think you'll hear a little bit of chirping. That's fun to see.
Yep, there's nothing better than Game 7 Stanley Cup Final. Finals of really any sport, any kind of anything. Game 7 for it all? Oh, please, yes.
To be fair, there's nothing better than playoffs in atmosphere in any way. Like, that's why you said, I'll start watching in October. Because even though we know the Tigers aren't making the playoffs, you find that team and you lynch on and you're like, yep, let's go, you know, let's go Boston, or let's go, you know, San Diego or whoever. You jump onto a team and you don't let go and you kind of enjoy the ride. And it's fun. It's playoff sports. I don't have a single chip in a Boston-St. Louis matchup. But I'm picking St. Louis, and I'm sticking with it and enjoying the, you know, they become your pseudo team for that series, and it's fun to enjoy. There's nothing better than playoff sports, and game sevens of playoff sports it's the best. It really is the absolute best.
Yep. The Apex.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Over to the other one. The Raptors lead Golden State 2-1. That Golden State team is they're having everything thrown at them they can, and rebounding's gonna be very tough. I mean, you got Klay Thompson out last game. Kevin Durant has yet to step on the court, and he will not step on the court tonight for this team. I think I heard something like 10 of 35 from the bench in this past game. Listen, Steph Curry going for 47 is amazing, but he can't do that every single game. So the question is, Russ, in this series, who has been the factor, whether it's someone for Toronto stopping Golden State or that other guy on Golden State who's keeping them kind of alive in this series?
It's easy to say, hey, Boardman gets paid and go with Kawhi. Also, check out that interview they unearthed. That was unreal. But I'm going to go with a guy like Danny Green, who's really provided some secondary scoring, a 3-and-D player that just, he's the kind of guy that Golden State wishes they had on their side right now. Because you mentioned Curry getting his 47. Draymond was next at 17, and there was nobody else, right? I think Iguodala had 11, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to do it. Can he do it every night? Probably not, but should he? Absolutely not, right? That's not how you regularly win. But Danny Green's over here. There's only 35 players that have attempted 53-point three-pointers in the finals or more. He's the only one shooting over 50% in the history of the game, right? Like, he's a bit player that's just filling in the gaps, and he's a lot of the difference, and he's part of why Toronto is winning. He's very emblematic of it, of this strong defense and spreading the scoring out all around the different players. So if I had to point to one underrated guy for a spotlight, I think Danny Green's a big part of what's going on.
Okay, yeah, I like Danny Green. I think he's a hell of a basketball player. He's a guy to me that's kind of interesting in all this, because he almost does become a real afterthought. I mean, you got You know, Kyle Lowry, you've got Kawhi, you've got even got Pascal Siakam, who's playing great basketball for them. You know, a guy who didn't even play basketball up until a few years ago. You've got a bunch of other names, Gasol. So you forget that Danny Green's been here. He's been to the finals. He's won titles. He's a good basketball player, and he does become a real afterthought. I mean, when I think Danny Green, my first thought is he's the guy in the dunk contest that tried to blow the candle out on the cupcake, and he thought that was an effective thing. So it is. It is interesting. And as I'm looking at this, listening to what you're having to say, you also know that it's a tough game when Steph Curry is your leader in all categories, assists,
everything,
points, and rebounds. That's when you know you had a rough night and a night that you almost need to get out of your system when you still have a chance in this series. Because a showing like that in a game six or a game seven, when it really matters, is impossible to overcome. You go into next year wondering what the hell just happened. Granted, the best player in the world is not playing right now. So you got to take that with a grain of salt. And the other half of the Splash Brothers is off, but he'll be back tonight. For me, I chose to actually go with someone from Golden State. And this is a guy, for me, that he has something to prove. He has to win this title because odds are this is the only chance he'll ever get to win a title. And that's DeMarcus Cousins. He's on a one-year deal. He's on a one-year deal. They can't afford him again. They got a lot of money they got to shell out in the next couple of years. So DeMarcus Cousins is playing for something, and when I've seen him play, while he may not be Mr. Score, which that's not what he needs to be, he's playing hard, he's playing aggressive, and he's doing what he can to keep the team going. He's accepting the role of, I'm going to get the ball, get it back out to the scorers. We need the offense. I'm going to do what I need to do. And in all fairness, he understands what this is. I'm playing for my one chance at a title because whatever team's going to be able to afford him is probably going to be a team that's not contending. And he knows he's not going to be in Golden State next year. So this is his audition reel because he just spent the last 70 games sitting on the bench not playing basketball because of injury. So
that's a good point. I'm glad you brought him up because he was in my notes from game two of the series.
Yeah.
He really changed the tone of the game because Golden State didn't have an answer to, like, the Siakam, Kawhi, Gasol, Ibaka just mess that they would throw in the paint.
Yeah, the big line. Yeah.
But then Boogie comes out and he actually provides a spark and kept him in that game throughout all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Curry scored his first points when it was 40-47, but it was close. And he was a big part of that.
And see, and that's part of it is, too, is I think DeMarcus Cousins knows when you look at this lineup, there's at least three, probably four guys that the ball goes to before him. So he understands.
Oh, easily.
I mean, Durant, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry are guarantees. You can make the argument for Andre Iguodala. You could even potentially, depending on what they're doing, make the argument for Draymond Green. It really is. It's a tough one, but you could actually make the argument for it. So he understands his role is, I need to get the ball. I need to, rebound. I need to set the picks. I need to be available, and I need to capitalize on my opportunities. If I only see the ball five times, I better end up with 10 points on those five times, or at least 10 points. So I like him for that, and I like him for the fact that he's playing good, he's playing aggressive, and now they're going to get Clay back. That spreads the floor a little bit more because now you don't have to worry about – you can't afford to put two guys on Curry because Clay can knock down the shots too. And, I mean, you've watched these guys – I've never in the history of basketball seen a team that moves so well without the basketball. These guys just don't stop running. There are times I see them passing the ball and I'm like, where the hell were you? Oh, you're looking at that guy who's wide open. Okay, yeah, I didn't see him. I didn't see him right there. Because they move so well without the ball. They're unselfish. They genuinely don't care who has the most points at the end of the game as long as they have a W at the end of the game. And that's rare in today. You see these other teams who have these superstars, and these superstars, if they don't have the ball for the last shot, they complain and cry. Steph Curry could care less if he scores 30 points a game, as long as he wins games. He's genuinely for that. So I like that Cousins had a reputation previously of kind of being a about himself kind of guy, and he seems to have shed that, albeit if it is just to make his money next year, he seems to have shed that and accepted the role, and I hope that helps turn this team around a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully, but wouldn't be the worst thing if Toronto won this.
No, I'm not saying that at all, but I just think, obviously I'm rooting for Golden State. I'd like to see Golden State win. I'm a fan of Steph Curry. I'm a fan of Durant. I think Kawhi Leonard winning one it's validation for Toronto, because Toronto has always kind of been a little bit of an afterthought in the NBA because they just haven't necessarily had the talent, and now they do seem to have the talent. It's a little upsetting that it took DeMar DeRozan, a guy who had been there for forever. Him and Kyle Lowry were best friends playing together for forever. It took trading away a guy who was a key piece to get an even bigger piece, and he doesn't get to be there for the success if they have it. So it's a little off.
It does sting a lot, and it sucks to be DeMar DeRozan right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it underscores how you need a GM that will go and do the necessary moves and not necessarily be tied to the past when it's going to hinder your team.
Oh, yeah, you do. You need a GM who understands that you can get as close as you want with these guys, but this is still a business. At the end of the day, yep. you are an expendable piece to improve the product. I mean, I know my boss. I know him quite well. You know, we're friendly, but I also understand that just because we're friendly doesn't mean that I won't come in here tomorrow and be told that I no longer have a job here because it didn't fit the way this station needed to be more productive. So
right.
You got to understand that. And yeah, everybody's expendable. Now, obviously there's a handful of names that they're not expendable because if you expend them, you hurt the team without ever having a chance to recover.
Oh, and probably lose your own job too.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, we'll see what comes up, but I will ask this of you, Russ. What after seeing the past game, seeing a lot of struggle, what do you need to see from the supporting, or I use quote, you know, quotation, air quotes here, supporting players for Golden State in Game 4 for them to avoid falling down 3-1?
A pulse.
Okay.
That would be nice.
It's fair.
Like, Draymond Green can't be your number two option.
No.
Right, like that's really the thing. I need someone from Golden State, probably two someones, to actually show up offensively. Right? They're getting killed inside, and Boogie needs more than he did in Game 3. If he can be like he was in Game 2, then they got a chance. But someone other than Curry has to get more than 20 points, or they're not going to have a shot.
No, I would agree with that. I understand a joke by saying a pulse, but it's a fair assessment that you can't. If the number I heard was right and it is 10 of 37 from the bench, you can't have that. That's terrible. That's absolutely terrible.
That's only an acceptable shooting percentage if you're actually sitting on the bench and shooting.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Steph's actually got a better shooting percentage when he does it. But
He probably would.
But I will say with Clay coming back, I think that you'll see a little bit more improvement of the offense. Like I said, you won't be able to get away with double-teaming one of these guys because Iguodala's proven that if given the opportunity, he can knock down a shot. Draymond is capable of, you know, getting to the basket, being aggressive, collapsing the defense. Steph and Clay are Steph and Clay. No matter how you want to shape it, they're probably the best backcourt in the NBA right now for that reason. So what I want to see from this bench is a good, solid contribution. I'm not looking for 70 or 80 points off the bench. That's unrealistic. But what I am looking for is a better shooting percentage. I want to see an effective shooting percentage because you've proven as a team when you take care of the basketball, play smart, and execute the offense, you have three titles in the last 4 years. You're very, very good at this game when you do it the way it's supposed to be done. So that's what I want to see. Your whole point of the bench is to provide that spark, that little energy when the starters start, you know, kind of wearing off. You need that. You need consistency. You need to hold up and don't give away the lead when you have it. Just be effective, be efficient. And I think this is a no-brainer, easy win for them. I mean, honestly, I don't think we're going to see Kevin Durant in this series. I really don't. Everybody keeps talking, oh, he might come back. If he could even remotely play, he'd play. I just don't think we're going to see Kevin Durant in this series. So I think Steph and Clay have to realize, okay, this is the 2015 finals when it was just us. We didn't have one of the best players in the world doing this. We got to do it ourselves, and this is a great test to see if they can do it. And I think they can do it. If you told me I had to pick between Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, I'm taking Steph and Klay every time. They're just, I think, put together, they're just a better team. So,
I would like. Should be. Injuries is what's killing them.
So that's, yeah. So to bring it all the way back around, I want to see an effective, efficient bench. You can't afford to go out there and shoot, you know, 20%. That's going to kill you. You need to go out there, be effective, hold leads, don't, you know, minimize the damage, and just give them a realistic chance to beat this team. Because I think if you can get this back to 2-2, you got a real good shot of that. So,
yeah,
we'll see what comes of it. It should be interesting. And
it should be.
To be fair, we will be talking about someone from one of those teams here in a few minutes. So,
Ooh,
a little teaser for you guys. A little teaser. See if you can guess. Our next topic, bringing it back home, bringing it back to the NFL a little bit. We can't go that long without talking about football, apparently. Last week, big play Darius Slay announced that he was going to hold out because he wanted a better deal. He wanted a bigger deal. He wanted a little more. We're a ways from the NFL season. I think I heard it's something like 90 days or something like that till we actually kick off for the first game of the NFL. So we have some time. But what I want to ask you, Russ, is how long as fans and as the Detroit Lions can you afford to not have Slay on this field practicing, working with the team, getting a grasp of all the changes before you legitimately have to start worrying and start actually addressing this, whether it's, you know, giving in and giving him the money or working out a deal to, you know, to trade him away. God forbid, we talked about it. He's a Mount Rushmore guy for us. He's someone that is key to this team. But how long can you actually go without Slay being a contributor to the Detroit Lions on and off the field before you have to start worrying about it?
Say right now, I'm 0% worried about it. Missing OTAs, there was three teams that canceled their last day of OTAs. Like the Broncos played home run derby and did remote control car races. Right, the Eagles bowled and the Jets went to Topgolf. Right, so missing OTAs, I'm not worried about it. But if he makes it a week into training camp and there's still nothing done, right, and now we're closing in and we're actually installing new packages and God, Tease Tabor looks like he might have to start. That's a scary proposition. So, yeah, if we open the first day of training camp, I'm not that worried. If we get a week later, I'm starting to worry. That's my exact deadline because as much as I'm sure he's working out on his own, it's different working out with the team. It's different building that chemistry in between you, especially when you have some new pieces of secondary that he has to learn to mesh with.
Okay. I like that. Mine was actually pretty close and pretty similar. Mine is you cannot afford to not have this guy on the field for the first week of preseason practice. First week of when you're prepping for a game. We play New England first week of the preseason. I understand that it's a preseason game. Doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot, but it is the first showing for our offense against a real defense. It's the first showing against the former world champions, against a team that Patricia used to coach with. It's going to have a little more than what it really is. And for Slay not to be out there, it's going to be a big hit. You want to say you're a big player for this team. You want to say you're a big leader for this team. Well, guess what? Swallow your pride. You're still getting more money than anyone deserves to play the game of football. Swallow your pride. Go out there. Have a big year. And let's address this when it's not leading into a season, when we're not this close to playing football. So if Slay is not in pads on the field week one of the preseason against the New England Patriots, that's when you have to start worrying, because that's when you got to realize you have three and a half weeks until the real games start, and you need to know, is 23 going to be in that secondary playing for you to his full ability, or is he going to be pulling a Le'Veon Bell and sitting on his ass at home? Because if he's going to be doing that, you need to accept that, guess what, you cannot go through what you did this offseason of making these moves, signing these players that are going to be contributors, doing all this, you know, like taking that risk on drafting Hockenson, this new tight end that is supposedly going to be great for us, and doing everything you've just done, bringing an offensive coordinator, for it to all fall apart because a guy you were supposedly thinking was a cornerstone has decided he doesn't want to be a cornerstone unless you pay him more money. So I think it has to be week one of this preseason, or else, I'm sorry to say it, I love Slay. I think he's awesome. I've had a chance to talk to him before. He's a great guy, really nice, insane athlete, one of the best corners in the league. But Quinn needs to understand that, guess what? Like we just said, everyone's expendable when it comes to sports. So if he's not going to be there to for this team, then he can't be on this team. It's just my feel about it. Because we mentioned caving in and giving the money, I think that does nothing good for you. Because now you've proven that, hey, if I throw a temper tantrum, I'm going to get what I want. And that's not a good thing to establish as a front office.
Well, I will throw out there, too, Snacks also was not at mandatory OTAs.
Yeah,
they have
the
same agent and the same amount of – I mean, they're in a very similar situation in that they both have 2 years left and they both have zero guaranteed money left on their contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I think it's a bit of solidarity between them, but it's also a bit of like, hey, 2021, the CBA's expired and we might have a lockout and I have no vehicle for getting paid during that lockout if it happens.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of what's driving this right now. So, I mean, doing a one-year extension, geez, even just restructuring, I think Slay has like a $3.5 million roster bonus next year.
Mm-hmm.
Restructuring that into a signing bonus, probably enough to get this done. It's just about protecting himself and his family, I really think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, wait, you're saying a Hungry Howie's commercial deal for Slay isn't enough of a vehicle to get him paid in the long term in Detroit? Is that what you're trying to tell
me? Did you see in that commercial they pushed him to the back of the line? No, it's not enough.
Yeah, it was worth a shot. I agree with you. I think that a new deal is out of the question in my mind. A new deal is an absolute – you're asking for a lot of problems. Restructuring, reworking, trying to maybe, you know, in that way, I completely agree. But you need to look at Slay and go like, listen, do you like it here in Detroit? And if you want to be here as we're turning this around, you can actually look in this locker room and see we're making correct moves in places where we need to make those moves. But if you come in here and suck the money out because you think you deserve it, we can't bring Snacks back in a couple years. We can't afford to hold on to these, you know, these guys who are on short deals or expiring deals. And if you do that, we have to go out and we have to pay, you know, face value for someone, and it's not going to match up. You know, some of these guys are going to be here for a while, but certain guys aren't going to be here for forever, and we need to be able to afford to keep them when their next deal comes around, or else we're building for nothing. We're holding on to be good for a year or two, and then we're going to fall off again. And that's not the end goal if you're a franchise. The end goal, I mean, it's an amazing goal to have, but is to be like the Patriots, where every year you're a Super Bowl favorite because, check the record. You're just always that good. Mm-hmm. And Slay, you know, Slay's got a pick. Do you want to win rings and go down as the greatest of all time? Or do you want to just keep, you know, you can get those big fat checks, and I can't blame you. You know, Jay says it all the time, pay that man his money. I can't blame you for wanting to get your money. You have a very short life when it comes to the, you know, playing pro sports. The life of that is very minimal. But at the same time, you know, I would think that the rings are just as worthwhile. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with it.
They could. Yeah, they could be. I mean, to your point about spreading the money around, someone actually did throw that out to him on Twitter. I think the scenario is one you'd like. They said, hey, cut Marvin Jones and split the $6.5 million in cap and give it to Slay and Snacks.
Well, I did see that. Well, we just signed what's his name? Jermaine Kearse. Yeah, we just signed him, so we don't need Marvin anymore. That's
You know me. Not the case.
The case in my mind, okay?
Slay had hit back, and he's like, no, we need Marvin. And really, I think that speaks to he isn't trying to get more money. He's trying to get some of that money guaranteed. Because if shit should happen, and he knows it's a business, he knows anyone can be cut, so he's got to treat himself that way, and that's smart to do. So, yeah, I really think it's just restructuring it, give him some guaranteed money, and we can call this done, and we can get back to business.
No, I completely agree with you on that. Guaranteed money, give him a chance. And the fact that he did fire back and say, no, we need Marvin, it, like, as you said, it shows that he's for the team, because anyone who's just about themselves would go, you know what, I like that idea. And it genuinely becomes an idea, but he didn't consider it for a second. Probably laughed it off, probably texted Marvin and goes, I like this guy's idea. And that was the end of it. That was the
just
end of it.
Like the two eye emojis that everyone likes to use. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that was the end of it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say that Darius Slay is a money grabber. Like, this guy genuinely does seem to be for the team. He's an outspoken leader for this team week in, week out. He wants to see the Detroit Lions be successful. And I think Yeah, I think he's got a couple weeks. He's got about a month to really look at it and go, you know what? I just wanted to show, I wanted to see that you guys were willing to work with me. I've seen you guys make the efforts. We haven't necessarily gotten where I'd like to be. Let's put it off. Let's play this season. Let's get back at it, you know, at the end of the year, wherever the year ends, and we'll see what happens. And part of it too is the guarantee of you don't know when your last play is going to be. He could choose to say, you know what, let's put this off. And then week two, God forbid, knock on any piece of wood you can find. He could decide to play, and then week two preseason, he could, you know, hurt himself. He's done for the year.
Yeah.
No money. So I do see where he's coming from, but at the same time, it just seems to me like this is a conversation that would have been great to have had in January.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Give us 6 months instead of 6 weeks to try to figure this out. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, for all we know, it's possible that it was happening, and it just got kept under wraps and nothing got done, so he's trying to apply some leverage. But yeah, I would think this should have been handled already.
Oh, definitely. 100%. 100%. So, I mean, yeah, we're on the same page here, though. We both think this is something that needs to be addressed. This needs to be addressed sooner rather than later, and we'll see what happens.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of someone who's never going to have a hard time when it comes to money ever again, we've teased a couple times that the Rocket Mortgage and a PGA event is coming to Detroit. It's coming to the Detroit Golf Club. The home of my lovely wife, who she does a bang-up job. Aaron, please listen to this and hear me paying you compliments.
we're being nice. We're
being good. But the other day I sent you and Jay a text, and the question I asked was, because there's been rumors that Tiger Woods might play in the Rocket Mortgage. It wasn't expected that he would. He doesn't usually play in small events when majors are that close. But it is almost that perfect time of, like, the U.S. Open is next weekend. You got 2 weeks. Then it's the Rocket Mortgage. Then you got another week or two, and then it's the Open Championship. So you've got that little buffer where it is almost you could take a week off, come play the Rocket Mortgage, take a week off, still have time to practice for the majors. So it's speculated that he might play. The field's already pretty great. You got Ricky Fowler, who is actually sponsored by Rocket Mortgage, so he's a little contractually obligated to be there. Dustin Johnson will be there. He's number one player in the world. Jay's really excited about that because he honestly believes that Pauline Gretzky travels with him to everywhere he goes.
Yeah, I don't think that's how that works.
I don't think that's how that works, Jay. I think she only goes where it's warm and nice.
Yeah. Hey, it's warm and nice this week anyway.
I think she'd rather stay in Florida where she lives.
Yeah.
You've got Bubba Watson. There's other names. I'm blanking at this particular moment. But I think that the way I posed it to you guys was, does this automatically become a much bigger event than it already is if Tiger Woods comes? And the way I kind of explained it was, golf is the only sport where, we just talked about Slay getting a chance to maybe, you know, have a say in when he plays. But golf is really the only sport where the players get to choose when they want to play. Matt Stafford can't look at Patricia and go, listen, it was a really rough week. We got Minnesota next week. I think I'm not going to play that week. I think I'm going to take a break.
I'm out.
Going to take a break. Going to go take a rest. That's what you have a bye week for. You know when your vacation is during the season. But
yeah.
Tiger can look, and any of these, a lot of these PGA players are playing for the money because, you know, you got to make the cut to get paid. If you don't make the cut, you make no money. So you can play 2 days of golf and you got to pay for your room and board and all that. But they are professional gamblers in a way. You're playing to get the money. And a lot of these guys are, you know, when you're finishing top 50, you're still making a very good living, but you're not making $1 million a week. You're making a good living. You're living comfortably, but you got to turn around and put that money right back on the line the following week. So guys like Dustin Johnson, guys like Ricky, guys like Tiger and Phil Mickelson and all them, who don't necessarily need to play every week, they can choose. They can say, you know, I don't really feel like driving to Wisconsin or flying to Wisconsin for the week. I'd rather just stay in Florida, hang out with my kids, and then, oh, next week we're at Augusta. I think I'll do that. So What I'm asking is, expectations as of now is that Tiger isn't going to be there. It's just going to be another PGA event. But if Tiger Woods decides he wants to play, how much bigger does the Rocket Mortgage become in the scale of sports and the scale of golf. You already know the coverage is going to be that much bigger.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does a huge thing for it. We talked, I think, a couple weeks back now about people that single-handedly changed the profile of their sport. And agreed, Tiger's, you know, one of, if not the most impactful in that avenue. And, yeah, he could go and play putt-putt, right, at some place next to a gas station.
Yep.
ESPN's going to cover it, right? Like, sure. Casual people are going to hear about it, you know, not just the hardcore fans that are, you know, betting dailies and everything on it. It would be a big deal. Like, yeah, Ricky, DJ, Bubba are all in it already. But, I mean, I know Dustin Johnson because Johnson, right? And I pick him every week. But the casual fan doesn't know a lot of them, right? So, yeah, he always brings the appeal. He's the sexy appeal. He's LeBron went to an AAU game, so now it's on ESPN. It's that kind of deal. So, yeah, I think it'd be a huge deal if he'd be able to come.
Yeah, no, and I do love the fact that you, every time you say Dustin Johnson, you have to finish it with Johnson.
I mean, it's consistency, if nothing else.
Listen, I'm totally 100% with you on this. I think that, when I compared it, when we were talking about it, as we were figuring out the schedule and how we wanted to word things and how we wanted to do things, I compared it to, imagine if one day back in 97, 98, Michael Jordan just decided, you know, that like there's this tournament once a year. I think I'm going to play in that this year. It would become the biggest thing on television just because he's doing it. It's the reason that the Phil and Tiger match in Thanksgiving was so big in pay-per-view, because we didn't know what we were going to get, and we were all a little let down. It didn't turn out to be the greatest thing ever, but it was that big. It was never seen before, where two guys decide, you know what? Let's forget the PGA Tour. Let's forget all that. Let's, you and me, let's go out and play 18 holes. We'll bring a couple cameras. We'll play a course that, you know, isn't on the regular tour, and it's just the two of us, and let's prove once and for all who is the better golfer right now. We're roughly the same age. I think Phil's got 4 years on Tiger. Where you obviously have, Tiger has, you know, twice as many wins on tour as Phil does, but Phil's always been that guy who's given him a hard time. He's always been right there to make it tough, and it's that. It becomes that much bigger. You know, if two guys that we don't know decide to do that, okay, Twitter might pick it up for 5 minutes, but it's not going to be anything. But this became a real thing. I mean, I put out a tweet, just let's go Phil, and put the hashtag with it for the event, and it got like 5,000 views just in the first 2 minutes, just because it was that. So it's that much bigger, and that's why I think Tiger coming here really does make this that much bigger. Even if it is just a simple tournament that doesn't mean anything other than, obviously there's FedEx Cup points for, they do the playoffs at the end of the year to figure out who wins the PGA Tour at the end of the year. But obviously you get some points for that, and, you know, it's a page.
Oh, wait. What is this now?
Each week, winner, like, you earn FedEx Cup points.
Okay.
So, like, whoever wins the tournament that week gets the most points. And there's a running total. Like, if I remember correctly, I believe Matt Kuchar is leading, which, yeah, his last name is Kuchar, is leading the FedEx Cup right now. So at the end of the year, I believe it's 4 weeks in a row. There are four tournaments where it's like normal tournament. There's still a cut depending on the score, but it's also, you also can't play the following week if you don't get to a certain point in the points. So like the top 20 of the FedEx Cup points advance. So you have to win enough, or you have to finish high enough in the tournament to even be allowed to play the following week.
Okay. And knowing this, certain golfers will just take some tournament games off.
Well,
and forfeit or a chance at earning any points.
Yeah, like some guys just know they're going to be I think everyone gets to play in the first one. So really, okay, you don't have to be the number one in the FedEx Cup points. Like, you could be number 300. If you finish high enough in that first tournament, you get to keep going. And the guy who's third might not get to keep going.
Okay.
So the FedEx Cup points just kind of help, like, with the standing. It's almost like hockey in that. You can have home field advantage, but that doesn't mean the 8th seed isn't going to win.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean?
I gotcha.
So,
look at that. I learned something today.
Yeah, so there is a, it's the, and that's when Tiger got his most, or other than the major, Tiger won the championship last year. He won the final tournament, so he was the PGA champion. So even though he won the last tournament, Justin Rose was the FedEx Cup champion because at the end of the year, he had the most FedEx points accumulated. So that's, yeah, that's how I thought you knew about that.
Nope.
Yeah, well, now you know. And now, yeah, so Dustin, as we're talking about this and I'm explaining this, I'm looking through the field to see who's playing, to see if there's any other big names that I may have forgotten. And as I look, there's a couple good guys, a couple good players, but no giant names that if I said them, you would know. I mean, other than the names I mentioned, Arnold Palmer's grandson is playing.
Doesn't have a first name. I think legally his first name is Arnold Palmer's grandson.
No, but if I told you Sam Saunders, would you know who that is?
No, but I would suddenly have a craving for Saunders Hot Fudge.
Well, that's his name, Sam Saunders. He looks just like Arnold Palmer if Arnold Palmer was 30. But
okay.
But yeah, other than that, like, and that's how this is. There's not a lot of big name players right now. So big name players that aren't known by anyone like that doesn't follow golf. Me, as I'm going through this, I know quite a few of these guys, but that's because I watch golf. I follow it.
Okay.
And all that. So Tiger coming really would be a giant leap for this. And now Russ has given me the amazing idea. We're going to have a FedEx Cup show at the end of the year. So Russ, there's more stats for you to have to start following.
Okay. Good thing I've got the internet already.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, but I think we're both in agreement. Tiger coming to this would be that much bigger for the tournament. It's just a matter of, and it really is, it's a true testament to how big someone is in their sport. And we've talked about it multiple times of how big and how impactful he is. So It'll be interesting to see. I think it'd be really awesome to see him play in it. And it'll be a little more enjoyable for me because I've played this course 100 times that they're about to play. So I can kind of watch it going, oh, they're there. Yeah, I don't usually put my ball there. And it'll just be a little more fun for that. Oh, I see what he did there. Yeah, that was probably the right place to go. I'm usually in that tree over there. Okay, that's a good – I'll remember that for the next time I play there.
Yeah, learn from the pros, I guess. Can I ask, though, how is it called the Rocket Mortgage Classic if it's the first one?
I don't know. That's a very good
question.
Like, how
is that a thing? Annual – no, like, this is just the first
See, technically, this tournament's been going on for years.
Oh, it's just the first time it's a PGA Tour event?
No. It used to be in D.C. every year.
Oh.
Quicken Loans. It used to be – I believe it used to be called Quicken Loans something or other.
Okay.
And then Dan Gilbert, in Dan Gilbert's way of trying to rebuild Detroit, decided he wanted to move it to Detroit. DGC got it, and I think they just are rebranding it as the Rocket Mortgage Classic. I think it used to be called like the Quicken Loans Invitational or something like that.
Okay.
So it's this tournament has gone on for many years. It just hasn't been in Detroit and hasn't been called this. I think they're rebranding it. So.
Okay.
That's how you get
well, look,
that.
Look at you just teaching me left and right.
I know some things. I don't always pretend. I don't always show that, but I know some things.
That's good.
But it's also, I think, it's also really cool for the fact that I told you guys this the other day. This is the first time there's ever been a PGA Tour event in Detroit. We've had things like at TPC Dearborn. They used to do the John Deere. And they've done U.S. Opens at Oakland Hills, which is in West Bloomfield. There's never, and DGC has been around since 1899. They were established in 1899.
Whoa.
It's one of the oldest country clubs there is, but there's never been a tournament in the city limits of Detroit for the PGA. And that's a monumental thing. I mean, DGC has been around for 130 or 120 years, and this is the first time you're seeing a tournament there. It's just kind of crazy.
That is pretty phenomenal. That's very odd, especially with how booming the auto industry was at a time and how Detroit was so prominent. I'm surprised.
Yeah. So we'll see. We got a couple weeks to it. So once we get Jay back, we're going to definitely make predictions for it. This is one that we'll be able to follow a little closer, a little more a little more anticipation for it, and it should be fun. It should be a great time. Fingers crossed Tiger plays. If he doesn't play, oh well. We'll just hope that Pauline Gretzky decides she wants to see Metro Detroit.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, Jay.
Jay is just, he's praying and praying and praying for that. So, all right, I think that covers all the other stuff. Let's get to the big topic, the one we've done our homework on, we've been prepared for. Russ, we have been having this conversation for the last 5-6 years, at least for one of these guys. And another one just recently became Hall of Fame possible. But there's a couple guys on my list I know for a fact we have debated many times. So as we do this, I want to know, are these guys... Or not. I want to
love it.
Are these guys standing in the Hall of Fame or not? Are these Hall of Famers? They're all on the bubble. Some of them, I think, are probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. It's just a matter of there's enough argument to be made that they shouldn't be. So I can't delay this any longer. We've had this conversation a million times, and a microphone's never been on for it. So now we can have it. Russ, is Ben Wallace a Hall of Famer?
No. Hands down, no. For 4 years, was he probably the best defensive player in the world? Yeah. Yeah, he probably was. But it was really only those, maybe you stretch it out to 6 years, and the guy averaged more than 8 points per game only twice in his career. That's not Hall of Fame. That's Ring of Honor. That's a maybe you get your number retired.
Which he did, yeah.
Yeah. But how can you make it to the Hall of Fame when you're only playing half the court?
Okay, I'm with you. I mean, listen, 5.7 points a game, two blocks, he averaged 0.4 short of 10 rebounds a game, horrible free throw percentage. I mean, the guy was an energy player. I'll give you that. There's very few guys that I think should be in the Hall of Fame that you can only say average 6 points and 10 rebounds a game, because those are generic numbers. But I think with Ben, you have to look at the other thing. You have to look at the intangible. This, to me, is one of those guys where I don't think numbers can get you. And then 7.2 points a game and 11.2 rebounds a game in the playoffs. So he was better in the playoffs. But I think this is someone where the numbers can't get you your answer. It has to be the eye test. And if you watched Ben Wallace, I guarantee you will never find another basketball player that didn't go end-to-end all the way as hard as they could on every single play, knowing full fact they were not going to touch the ball on that play. I will argue that he is the best defensive, or top three defensive centers I have ever seen in the game of basketball. Guys who care nothing about points, care nothing about what their offensive stats are. Their job is to play defense, get in front of the ball, and do not let the ball go in the basket. And guess what? He did that against some of the best. He did it against the best to ever do it. He literally played Shaq one-on-one for an entire series and handled Shaq. Listen, Shaq's going to get his points. It's the same as saying Jordan's going to get his points. Gretzky's going to score his goals. But you can limit the bleeding, and you can make it tougher for him, and Ben Wallace did that. And anyone that can do that against some of the best to ever do it in an era where we could put together all-star teams of just the scorers that they had to deal with in the NBA that Ben Wallace had to guard. Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett. Yeah, these guys are the best to ever do it, and Ben Wallace was able to stay in front of them and keep them under wraps. Explain to me how that's not Hall of Fame caliber.
Because it's only half of the game. I mean, yes, he's only one of two players to ever win 4 Defensive Player of the Year awards, with the other one being Dikembe Mutombo.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an absolute liability on the offensive side of it. So the Hall of Fame, I really think, is the elite of the elite, right? You have to be one of the best at your position. And for me, you can't be able to tell the story of the era without explicitly mentioning that person. Like, that's my barometer for the Hall of Fame. Ben Wallace, and I mean, maybe in Detroit, obviously, we're going to talk about him. But
yeah,
from the outside, and you're talking about that era, you're going to talk about those guys he was guarding before you're going to talk about Ben Wallace. Really, it's... the numbers don't look good, and you kind of got to that. And he means so much to a team, and I think that's why, hey, I understand retiring his number. But
Okay.
He only did half the job, right? Like, we already get enough gruff with, like, kickers and punters, right, that do everything they're asked to do, right, even do it at an elite level, and they're not making the Hall of Fame unless you're Ray Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Wallace is kind of like a kicker, right? He's very much a specialist. Now, maybe he's one of the best to have ever done it at his position for a time, but he didn't do enough else to be put in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Okay. This guy's already in the Hall of Fame, the guy I'm about to compare him to, but I want to ask for this. We're gonna do roundabout math, so we're going to say that Ben Wallace averaged 6 points and 10 rebounds a game, okay?
Okay.
We're going to say he averaged that.
Yeah, that's not far off from his average.
It's not that far off. They're 0.3 and 0.3, so I'm not stretching to say that he averaged those. This guy averaged 7 points and 13 rebounds a game, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Do you think, then, that if the numbers are that close, why is Dennis Rodman in the Hall of Fame?
Championships.
Well,
simply put.
But in Jay's points, even then, because we asked Jay about this, he said for Ben Wallace that other players helped him get titles.
Yeah.
Three of his championships were with Michael Jordan. So is that just meaning that if you played with Mike for three championships, you get to be in the Hall of Fame? Dennis Rodman's an amazing player, but Dennis Rodman was Ben Wallace before Ben Wallace. Dennis Rodman was a freaking rebounding, get-the-ball kind of guy, and they were roughly the same height. I think Dennis Rodman maybe gave up an inch to Ben Wallace.
Yeah, Rodman was 6'7". No, you make a good point. Doesn't mean that I agree that Rodman should be in the Hall of Fame either, though.
Okay, well, then that's fair, then. If you don't agree, then there's no point. But that's what I'm saying. That's where I'm going to support mine. Dennis Rodman was the other one of the best rebounding defensive players I've ever seen in my life. And to say that one's in without the other, they were roughly the same guy. I mean, Ben Wallace stands at 6'9", which he's actually 6'8". 6'8", 250. Rodman is 6'7", 240. So they were not that far away from each other. So I think that would be my argument, is what Ben did was something that wasn't popular at the time that we were... Back when Ben played, it was scoring. That's why AI and Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter and Kobe Bryant and all these guys are mentioned beforehand, and Kate and, you know, Garnett and Shaq, because scoring was the big thing. Defense wasn't necessarily as popular, but Ben played defense better than anyone else. That's why he's got four of those trophies. So, yeah,
well,
I mean...
It's a really good comparison there, and you make a good point in laying out precedence. But I would argue that Rodman's probably only in there because he's a five-time champion, and that's not all his fault, whereas Ben's only got the one.
Okay, so we knew this one was going to come to an impasse anyway. But
oh, yeah, we weren't going to agree.
We had to have this conversation. So I want to hear one of yours, but I have one more because I don't want to get away from this team. I have two guys from the same team, and then I'll let you give one. This one should be quick because I don't think you're going to say yes to it. Should Chauncey Billups go into the Hall of Fame?
No, I don't think Chauncey Billups is a Hall of Famer.
15.2 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists a game.
No. I mean, Chauncey was big for this team, but he was a journeyman, more or less, for his time where Detroit wasn't really, really good. I mean, is there anything that he truly excelled at other than, you know, being quote-unquote Mr. Big Shot? I mean, 3-point field goals, 14th best. I'm looking through some of what he stands. Points per game, 20th best. Assists per game as a point guard, 94th. Right?
Yeah,
a career average of 5.4.
He was not a big assist man, and that's also just because of the fact that they moved so much with the ball that not often did one pass score. So I'll give you that. I really will. And I'm looking at it, though. He only has the one championship. There should have been more there. I agree with that. The team we had should have won more titles. They made two straight finals. NBA Finals MVP, five-time All-Star, All-NBA second team, All-NBA third team twice, All-NBA defensive second team twice. He was a journeyman without a doubt. He absolutely for that. But I just think, and the only reason I bring Chauncey up is in doing the research, they're the only two that ever get mentioned for Hall of Fame consideration. So you have to bring it up. I don't think Chauncey Billups is a Hall of Famer. If he goes into the Hall of Fame, I'm going to be very happy for him. I really am. The journeyman thing kills it. The fact that he played on, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 teams, for almost 6 years before he came to Detroit, and then he played on another four teams after Detroit. That takes it away. It's very hard to elect someone to the Hall of Fame that played on nine teams. So I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I think if any of those two guys from that the going-to-work team was going to go to the Hall of Fame, these are the two, and it'd be fun to see. It is a lot more sentimental because we grew up watching them.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the same as, and I don't have this guy on my list, and if he is on your list, I apologize. It's the same as Chris Draper has no business going to a Hall of Fame, but you have a little sentimental care for Draper because we saw what he did and we saw how hard he worked while he was here in Detroit. But he'll never go to the Hall of Fame. So,
and he shouldn't even be in the conversation,
No. But I'm just saying you have those little sentiment. I'm not gonna mention Darren McCarty in this. That's why at least Chris Draper was a complete hockey player. So I'll give him a little more love than, because a lot of those players, he literally played on a roster of Hall of Famers 1 year, and he's not one of them. So it's tough. So all right. So those are my two. I've got a million more, but I want to hear one of yours.
Okay. So I'll start off with a guy that's still playing that I've got on here.
Okay.
And he's a rare exception for me that goes against the rule that I said earlier about, you know, were there years that he was the absolute best at his position? And can you tell the story of the era without them? And that's Frank Gore. I don't think he was ever at any point the best running back in the league. And maybe I can tell a story about any of the years that he played without ever mentioning him, but the guy's fourth all-time in rushing yards. Right. Out of the top 12 in total rushing yards, you're either in the Hall of Fame or you're Frank Gore or Adrian Peterson. Right. That's it. They're all in there. He has the record for most seasons with 1,200 yards or more. No, he only has one season with more than 1,300 yards, right? But that's the model of consistency in a position that is consistently anything but. So it's, I normally stand against this, but he was exceptional in his longevity and consistency.
Okay, all right. I'm obviously Frank Gore wasn't on my list, so I'm doing some real quick just brush up on. This will be Frank Gore's 14th year in the league. No. Yeah, 14th year. He came in in 05, so 14th, 15th year in the league. Fourth all-time in rushing. You go over to a guy who played the exact same amount of years, played 14 years. He's number one all-time in rushing. That's Emmitt Smith. Is Frank Gore a Hall of Famer? Yes, I think Frank Gore is a Hall of Famer because of the product. Was he ever the flashiest, best running back in the league?
No.
There's never been a time. He played in the era of Adrian Peterson, played in the area of Steven Jackson.
Everyone, practically.
Something like Steven Jackson. Guys were like, and these guys aren't maybe as good as him, but these guys were just flashier and got more attention than because he played on a really bad 49ers team. So a lot of what he did was just him. And almost, and this is not a fair comparison because no one will ever be better than this guy. He was almost like Barry in that way. No one else was good on the team, so they needed him to be really good, and he was really good. But see, that's what gets me. Emmitt Smith has the most rushing yards. He's not the best running back of all time because what no one seems to realize is Barry played for like 9 years in the league and decided to hang it up. He literally gave it up in the middle of his prime. If Barry played 14 seasons, the rushing record, what is it now? It's 18. The rushing record would be 26,000 yards if Barry Sanders decided he wanted to play out a full NFL career. Even if he didn't stay in Detroit, even if he went somewhere else, the record would be a number that anyone else in this league today would have to play for 30 years in the NFL just to touch.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, and I think Frank Gore is kind of the antithesis to Barry Sanders. Whereas, like, Barry was always flashy, and he was, arguably the best player in the league while he was playing. Whereas Frank Gore never really was, and he's going to have a long career, an abnormally long career, and somehow they're going to end up, within 500 yards of each other, maybe less.
Yeah, I will say this. This is the only thing I would hold against Frank Gore. Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, even Adrian Peterson right now, all three of them were they were the go-to guy on the team when they were on the team from beginning to end. Even when Emmett was in Arizona, he was still the guy they were giving the ball to. Even even now, as AP goes from Minnesota to Washington, he's still the guy they're giving the ball to. Frank Gore, the last couple years, has really just kind of been a guy who's stacking up the or padding up the stats. He was the go-to guy in San Francisco. No one will disagree with that. But he really wasn't necessarily numero uno in Indy. And Miami, he for sure wasn't. And in Buffalo, he's going there to be a backup number two back. So right now, he's really just making the stats look prettier. You could really argue that he hasn't really been a key player since 2016 in the middle of the Indy stand. So the last 3 years, he's really just padding the stats. That's a, for some reason, that's a tongue twister for me today. Padding up the stats. So is he a Hall of Famer? Absolutely. You can't take a guy that's got almost 1,500 or 15,000 rushing yards and say he's not in the Hall of Fame. So, yes, Frank Gore, I would say, is a Hall of Famer.
Okay. I mean, I can see the argument against him, but, yeah, I ultimately ended with he's done something exceptional that, I mean, really, who else is going to do that? Play at 35, this year 36 in the NFL as a running back?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
I remember watching him. Not that I don't still watch him, but he's a very, very, very good player. He was very good. The problem was he was on bad teams, made it tough for him. All right. So we'll agree with that. Frank Gore, Hall of Famer, 100%. I'm checking off as I'm going to remember that I did things. So that one. Here's my next one. I will preface this with I think he's going to make it to the Hall of Fame. Whether he was worthy of it or not is an entirely different story.
Okay.
Carmelo Anthony.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
Because you got to think when he played. He played in the time of LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Kobe.
He wasn't even the best guy in his own draft.
In my opinion, he was the third best guy in his draft. Because we're not going to talk about LeBron and Dwayne Wade. Those two are going to walk into Hall of Fame the day they're eligible to be there. And I mean, you can make the argument for Chris Bosh too. I don't think Chris Bosh is a Hall of Famer. I think Chris Bosh is a guy who happened to find the right situation at the right time and is going to look really good. But Carmelo was a guy that everywhere he went, he was the guy on that team. He was the go-to guy. I'm looking at it for his career, and we don't know that his career is over. He really might play again. He hasn't played since this past. He played 10 games for Houston this year. A lot of controversy in Houston, but 24 points a game, averaged 6.5 rebounds, 3 assists, averaged about 5 blocks or 0.5 blocks a game. He's a great, great player. And I mean, unfortunately, his playoffs aren't that great just because he didn't play in the playoffs very often, but he still averaged 24 points and 7 rebounds a game in the playoffs. So by simple math, those are more than fair numbers to get you into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but here's my counterpoint to him, and I think this is the quintessential Carmelo stat. He has played the 92nd most games out of any player ever.
Yeah.
He has attempted the 15th most field goals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's Carmelo, right? He's going to rack up counting stats because he's the only guy in town, and hey, Carmelo's the one-man cold, right? He's the only one coming down with it. He's just going to be shooting constantly. So you want to talk about counting stats? He's absolutely going to have them. You want to talk about efficiency? You want to talk about accomplishments? Yeah, I can't say he's – when was he the top five guy at his position? I mean, maybe a couple years? Not nearly enough for how long his career has been.
I will say – came into the league in 2003, last played 18-19. And so in his 15-year career – he has only been number one in the league for points per game once, and that was 2012, 2013 for the Knicks. He averaged 28.7 a game. But to be fair, I am looking, and that's not even his career best. His career best was actually 06, 07 in Denver. He averaged 28.9. So someone beat him out there. But I will say this. I'm looking at this. In his entire career, there have only been two seasons, and we're not going to count we're not going to count the Houston season because he didn't really get a fair shake in that one. There's only been one season where he hasn't averaged at least 20 points a game. So he's a consistent scorer, to say the
least. Absolutely.
But I am looking at it, and I will agree with you. His career, he had a 44.9 for field goal percentage and a 347 for three-point percentage. He's average. He has a 81% from the free throw line. So he's effective in his percentages, but yes, he has shot the ball a lot.
He's a volume guy, and he needs it.
Yeah. So, all right. So if I had to put you on a committee, is Carmelo Anthony going to get your vote to be in the Hall of Fame?
No.
No. Okay. I will agree with you. I think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I think that that draft class is just going to go to the Hall of Fame together. Dwayne Wade, Bosch, LeBron. I think they're all going to be in there just because it's going to go down as one of the better draft classes when you see
Banana Boat just walks in together.
Yeah, when you see what what came out of that draft class, I think they're going to go together. Not all together, obviously, because they're all going to retire at separate times. But they're all right. They all will be that 03 draft class will be in the Hall of Fame together. But I will admit that I only think two of the four rightfully have earned to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Darko being one of them, right?
Darko, absolutely. Darko's eligible for the Hall of Fame right now.
Damn it, Darko.
Yeah. This guy, I just want to touch on real quick because we've already discussed it before. If he deserves to go to Canton, he's still playing. He's not anywhere near retiring. But Julian Edelman.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Do you think it's Brady effect? What Brady's done with him makes him look that much better?
I think that's a big part of it. He's a right fit. I mean, and this isn't an insult, but he's a system guy. Right? Okay. Like he fits that system perfectly. And that a lot of people take that as a slight. It's not a slight, right? It's really hard to fit a system perfectly in the NFL or any league for that matter. But that you have to create a system or have the system created around you or transcend a system really to be a Hall of Fame player. I mean, he has 2 years where he had over 1,000 yards receiving. Is he a guy that, I mean, he's never going to pay for another meal in the Boston area for the rest of his life.
No.
Right. But no, I don't think we can talk about the Hall of Fame for him.
Okay. Well, 499, but I'm going to call it 500. 500 receptions, 5,390 receiving yards. 10.8 a reception, 30 touchdowns. I mean, but see, then I think to call him a system guy, are you saying that Wes Welker was that step ahead of him, was a step better? Because Wes went to Denver and didn't miss a beat.
Well, and didn't he not miss a beat having Peyton Manning throwing to him?
Okay, well, if we want to get into the argument of great quarterbacks, they did kind of play in an era where, you know, almost every team at one point or another had a guy that was pretty damn good under center.
Yeah. No, there was a handful of absolutely fantastic guys there. But, I mean, Wes Welker, he had a 1,600-yard season. I mean, he put up a lot more stats that make Julian Edelman's pale in comparison.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a no on Julian Edelman. I'm actually going to be a yes on Julian Edelman. For the reason he's only played 10 years, you would assume he's at least got another five, six years in him. And to say that keeping on the average, the guy could easily get pretty close to 8,000 yards receiving. So I'm not going to say, I'm going to say that, yeah, I think when it's all said and done, he puts a gold jacket on and he probably goes to the Hall of Fame.
Okay. All right. He better thank Tom Brady first, second, and last in his speech.
But I do agree that Tom Brady had a lot to do with it. Tom Brady's going to have a lot to do with a lot of guys getting into the Hall of Fame. So, all right, so who would be next on your list?
So I got a guy that kind of went against my conventional logic here. But as I looked deeper into it, I ended up talking myself out of his Hall of Fame bid, and that's Henrik Lundqvist.
Ooh.
Right, yeah, right. Like real sexy man. That's a good looking man. Good looking resume. Right, very consistently good. One Vezina, two All-Star appearances.
Yeah,
he's been really good. About 920 for most of his career. Struggles in the postseason. Some of that due to injury, sure. But I don't know how many times he was truly the best goalie in the league. I mean, you want to talk about career goals saved above average, right? So we get away from some of the team influence stats. Luongo has a better one, and I don't think Luongo is getting in.
No.
Counting, yeah, they start to look good, the wins and everything, but he's played the 12th most games out of goalies, right? Like, New York has been riding him hard for a long time now.
Yeah.
So he's going to be racking up those counting stats. So they're impressive. But was he the best of what he did? He was up there, but I don't know. It's been a very small list of goalies that have gotten in recently, and I'm pulling it up right now so I can actually get through it. So since 2003, it was Grant Fuhr, Patrick Waugh, Ed Belfour, Dominic Hasek.
That's it.
That's all that's been in, all the goalies that have been put into the Hall of Fame in 15, 16 years now.
Yeah.
Lundqvist isn't at that level. And it hurts to say, because I hope he makes it, right? Like, I hope when the time comes he makes it into the Hall of Fame. But I don't think he's ready yet, and he's breaking down hard.
Yeah, I it was a no for me when you even first mentioned him, but you kind of talked me right, you know, made me more comfortable in my decision. He's a great goalie. He's a great goalie. And in the years of watching hockey, you and I have both seen a lot of great goalies. Doesn't mean they're Hall of Fame worthy. When you list off the name of players you did for goalies, they were a league above everyone when they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts to say because Patrick Waugh's in that list, but they were ahead of everyone else. They were guys that revolutionized the game, so we're seeing a bunch of other people do what they did. He's a great goalie, amazing goalie, and the Rangers have had some serious success because of him. But no, he's not a Hall of Famer. He's a great goalie, not a Hall of Famer.
I agree.
This was just a real quick one. Do you think there's any chance we see one Sedin brother get in and not both?
No.
Both?
I think that'd be funny as hell.
I think it'd be hilarious. But you mentioned Lundqvist, and for some odd reason that popped in my head. But yeah, that one wasn't even on the list. It was just a quick funny thing. I'm going to skip the next guy on my list because I want to keep the trend. You brought up a goalie, so let's have the other debate you and I have had 100 times
while
drinking beers. Is Chris Osgood a Hall of Famer?
No, he is Chris Osgood. He is not Chris Osgreat.
Dude, we've looked at this, though. His numbers are shockingly close to Patrick Waugh's.
His counting numbers? Yes, his count. But that's part of that is, God, I hate this argument, but part of this is he had a team that really, really helped him along to that. Was he good and is consistency a skill? Yeah. But he only got votes to the Vezina in 4 out of his 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he was he good? Yeah, he was Osgood. He wasn't Osgreat, right? Like, I'm going to keep coming back to that.
Yeah, you can say that all you want. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't. There was maybe a couple years where you could even say that he was a top 5 goalie in the league, right, through his actual performance. He wasn't asked to do much more. I mean, he did just about everything you can ask, but he never really transcended the position to where I would want to put him in the Hall of Fame.
I find it so amazing that the guy who is literally Mr. Numbers when it comes to our debates just can't, like, you seem to be ignoring the biggest ones of all. We call this guy the greatest goalie of all time, and Osgood has similar numbers to him. Yet somehow that's an erased factor. Like, that's like saying some guy comes out and literally averages mere numbers of Michael Jordan. And you go, yeah, no, not there. They did the exact same fucking thing.
No, they didn't, though. You're looking at total sums, right, and not efficiencies, not per games, not per shots, right? Like, if he plays 5 more years, he should get more wins, right? And even if you want to talk about that, yes, he's 13th all-time in wins. He made it to the magic 400 threshold.
Yep.
Cujo's above him. Luongo's above him. Marc-Andre Fleury, who's still playing, is above him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is Cujo getting in? Because we're passing his window. Is Luongo getting in? Like, he has the sum numbers, but that doesn't mean he was great. And he didn't do it to such a transcendent level. Like, hey, Frank Gore's top 5 rushing all time. That's amazing. Is Chris Osgood top 5 anything all time? I don't believe he is the last time I looked.
No, he isn't. And that's what I'm saying. He is more of a grind out guy that I just think when you look at everything, one, I think that the one thing that Chris Osgood has going against him, when you look back at it, and if you want to run the eye test like something like me, like I do, he has the uncanny ability to forget how to play hockey at some of the worst times ever, letting in goals that peewee kids know how to stop. He somehow lets in. And it's a little bit contributor because he doesn't look as consistent then when you see that. But I've seen this guy play. We both have seen this guy play a lot. And he's just, to me, he's a Hall of Fame goalie. If you're going to talk about it, he's a Hall of Fame goalie. And again, yeah, this is like Ben Wallace. This is one that you and I have never, ever seen eye to eye on. We will never see eye to eye.
Yeah, we're probably not going to. But if I'm not going to put Lundqvist in, I'm probably not going to put Osgood in either.
No, that's fair. That's why I'm saying this one here for sure, this is a debate that will never be ended until either he's, and I don't know if, like, can you run out of eligibility? You can be eligible until you're 99, correct?
I think so. Okay. I'd have to double check that.
This one will either end when they give him a place in the Hall of Fame or when, you know, when he dies and is
one
no longer.
Dies.
Yeah, when one of us dies. So, but we're never going to agree on it, and that's totally fine. But this is a good one because there's evidence to support he should be a Hall of Famer. There's evidence to support he has no business being in the Hall of Fame. So it is the clash. And that's what this is. Selecting for the Hall of Fame for 75% of it is really just a matter of opinion. There are those few guys that you cannot deny have to be in the Hall of Fame. But they're, you know, like Gretzky, like Howe, like Yzerman. You can't deny that they have to be in the Hall of Fame. But you
All
can
right.
you can talk about the other 75%. So it's fair. Well, if you're listening to this, you'll clearly see a trend because the next few people on my list are all Detroit athletes. So I jumped over this guy. This guy isn't playing in Detroit now, still playing.
Okay.
But it's a fair argument to have.
Okay.
Should JV be in the Hall of Fame? Should Justin Verlander be in the Hall of Fame?
I had a funny feeling that's exactly who you were going to talk about. And I'm married to my emotions. I immediately want to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
But
you see, you did exactly what I did. When I wrote this down last night, I was talking to Erin, and I'm writing. She goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "We're doing this Hall of Fame list." And she goes, "Oh, okay." And I'm like, "I put Justin Verlander on the list." And she goes, "Oh, really?" I'm like, "But it's tough because you have to, as a sports person doing this kind of commentary, you have to look past the fact that this is someone you idolized growing up, that you watched in the World Series, that you thought was the best in the league, because for a while he was one of the best pitchers in the league. Still is an amazing pitcher, but you have to look at what it is. He's 213 in wins. He's got 336 ERA. He's almost got, like, what, 2,800 strikeouts. He's an amazing pitcher. But is he Greg Maddux, Randy Johnson, all these guys good?
Oh, he might not be. That stings to say.
It's tough.
I didn't think that's where I was going to end up. But he does have one MVP. He has one Cy Young.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He has one pitching triple crown. So, yeah, he checks the box on when I say, was he the best at his position for a while? Yeah, for a time he absolutely was, but
late 2008, 2009, I would say he was probably top three pitchers in the game.
Yeah, before the real rise of Kershaw.
I will say back Roy Halladay and him were top two for a year there, I would say.
Yeah.
It's tough. This is a tough one because of the fact that he is a Detroit legend. But see, the problem is he to us feels like he should be, because you think, like, when you think to those moments, you think him and Miggy were the it. But Miggy's guaranteed going to go to the Hall of Fame. Miggy was just too good to deny. Verlander was really good, but there's evidence to support maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just didn't. This sucks. Going through this, watching him, you think, man, he's dominant. But where he stacks up, it's strikeouts, career 20th of all time. Okay, especially compared to his career starts of 94th all time, that's pretty good. Strikeouts per nine, 19th of all time. Okay, we're getting somewhere with it. But some of the other stuff, career wins above replacement, 128th. Amongst pitchers, 37th. Like, that kind of screams fringe, right? Yeah. Like, that's, there's no real efficiency stuff that says, hey, he has to be in there. Man, I hope he does get it. That'd be great. But, yeah, I think I'd like to see a couple more Cy Youngs or at least get to that, you know, famed 300-win plateau before we can really round out that resume.
300 wins gets him there, I think. 300 wins yeah. gets
He's
him there.
A mile away.
Maybe, oh, he is. Maybe another, I mean, you got to think what? He starts every 5 days. He probably gets what, about 40 starts? You got to think he's going to get a break somewhere in there and all that.
Yeah, probably mid-30s at most.
Okay, so assuming
he's looking at what he's done in the past.
He's not going to win every game, but yeah, he's got quite a bit to get there. But I think 300 wins and or another World Series definitely helps his case. And it sucks because it's looking like it's almost for sure that World Series isn't going to be here. So
no, no, unfortunately.
So, fair to say, we'll call it a TBD.
Yeah, but I'm leaning no, and that really sucks.
That's very tough. This one real quick, because I think this one's a for sure no, but I'm looking at the numbers, and the numbers are close enough that I think he'll get a consideration when it's time, and that's V-Mart.
Victor Martinez.
295 batting average, 2,153 hits, 246 home runs, 1,178 runs batted in.
Yeah, I'm going to also go no for Victor for the simple fact that he's more of a longevity guy that, hey, he did it for a very long time there, for 16 years. But was he ever really the best at what he did? He played a position that he was just charged with hitting, right? Like, for a while, he was a catcher, and that took its toll on his body. And that's really when he was at his best, because he was arguably one of the best catchers in the game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of his career, if you're going to talk about his counting stats, where it was that's all he's doing is hitting. And even then, he was maybe the best professional hitter, but not the best overall hitter in the league at those times.
Yeah, I would agree.
You're making me sad.
I think it's a no. I think it's a no for V-Mart.
It's a no.
The career stats are enough that if you looked at other guys, I'm almost going to guarantee there are some guys from recent years in the Hall of Fame with quasi-similar numbers. So
he's not going to get to 3,000 hits. That's going to sting.
Yeah.
And that's really going to hurt him for someone who his bat is really his only reason to put him in there.
Absolutely. So it is what it is. All right. If we haven't checked everyone off your list, who do you have?
The one guy I had left is a guy you could make the argument that he's done some things that make him Hall of Fame eligible, but I've also got some reasons why he shouldn't be, and just as a character standpoint, I hope he's not.
Okay.
And that's Curt Schilling.
Ah, okay.
Yep, six-time All-Star, three-time World Series champ, got a World Series MVP under his belt, no Cy Youngs. Right, his first All-Star appearance was at age 30. Right. He pitched for 20 years, which, hey, is great, but he only won 20 games three times. Now, hey, pitchers, wins, kind of a team stat, I understand that, and if you play for a bad team, you're not going to rack them up. But when we're talking about the elite of the elite, you want to see more than three times in 20 years. He did play on some good teams, but often he wasn't even the best pitcher on his team. I mean, Arizona, where he really had a chance there, he had Randy Johnson.
Yeah.
Right, he's going to do stuff there, but I don't think Schilling was transcendent enough for long enough that he really makes that case. Plus, he's made some xenophobic and transphobic comments that are enough for him to stay out on its own. But
he's
a guy that came close.
Yeah, well, I mean, as of now, he's only got three more wins than Justin Verlander, who we just said needs to get to 300 wins just to be in a consideration. I will say it this way, and it's a no for me. It is. He was a good pitcher. I remember watching him. You made the clear case, though. When you're on a great team and you're not even the best pitcher on the team, see, that's the argument we can at least make for Verlander. He was always the best pitcher on the Tigers.
Oh, easily.
He was always
yep.
the best. You can make the argument when him and Scherzer were together that Scherzer was right there with them, but for the most part, Verlander was always the best pitcher on the team. Randy Johnson was better than Curt Schilling, and it's obvious why. The reason I'll say no is when you're the most memorable thing about you in your career is a bloody sock, that doesn't necessarily tell me that you had a lot to be remembered for.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, he does check off the box, and you have to tell his story when you tell the story of the era.
Absolutely.
But yeah, not doesn't check the box for one of the best at his position over that time.
Yeah, so my statement, will he, maybe just for sentimental reasons, probably get in, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he came real close in this past draft class, or this past Hall of Fame class. So it might happen eventually.
Okay. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I got two current players, but I have three left, and I want to do them. We're going to do these as rapid fire. I just think
okay. These
are three that should be pretty easy, quick answers, but the first one to me is the easiest yes or no. I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but I think that a lot of people aren't going to want him to be a Hall of Famer, and that's Donovan McNabb.
Ooh, Donovan McNabb. I don't know that he's done enough. Get in there.
234 to 117 touchdown to interception ratio. 37,000 passing yards, 85.6 completion rating, passer rating, 59% completion rating, rushed for just shy of 3,500 yards and 29 rushing touchdowns. So he's got 37,000 yards passing. I don't know what the all-time, I know what the all-time is. I don't know where he falls in he's the fourth quarterback in NFL history to amass more than 30,000 passing yards, 200 touchdowns, and 3,000 rushing yards. And 20 rushing touchdowns. The only other two are Fran Tarkenton, John Elway, Steve Young, all Hall of Famers.
Right, but he is 25th all-time in passing yards and 30th in passing touchdowns.
Okay.
So he doesn't really – he might have done it early in his career, right, to get to those plateaus and get to those fancy numbers early. He didn't have the longevity some of these other elite guys have.
Okay. Yeah, he only played 11 years. So,
and that's kind of what did it for him. I mean, in some of those, you know, in the middle there, he's playing 9 games, 10 games.
To be fair,
games. He
took a real beating in Philadelphia.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
Were bad for a while. So that's what I'm saying. I think he's a Hall of Famer just for when you look at what he did, you have to look at it from it's almost kind of. He's not comparable in any way in the athletic talent, but it is almost. You have to look at what he did. By himself, because like with Barry, the records were terrible, but Barry Sanders was still amazing. The record was terrible for Donovan McNabb, but he was still good. Still put up almost 40,000 passing yards. Still put up, you know, an insane amount of touchdowns. Obviously, the rushing is all because he had to scramble and evade getting killed, which he wasn't always able to do. So I think he's a Hall of Famer, but I don't think he's a first choice Hall of Famer. I think he's one of those guys who's going to get into the Hall of Fame when he's in his, like, 60s, because it'll be one of those, you know what, this guy was actually pretty good. We might want to give him a look, that kind of thing. He's not an immediate first thought.
Yeah, I just think if he would have stayed healthier, he would have a better argument. Yeah. And not saying that's his fault, just how the cards played.
It is. This next guy isn't even playing anymore, but he's still in the NBA, and that's Steve Kerr.
Steve Kerr is going to end up making it in as a coach.
Oh, I would agree, but see, the thing that everybody seems to forget, I don't remember if it's percentage or what, but Steve Kerr is number one all time in 3 points. I'm reading it right now. As well as three-time Warriors. Kerr has the highest career three-point percentage in NBA history for a player with at least 250 three-pointers made. He also held the NBA record for highest three-point percentage of 52.4 until Kyle Korver broke it in 2010. So he's got two three-point records, which I think is hilarious for the fact that his team's going to go down as being known as the greatest three-point shooters of all time. But he's going to get in as a coach. He's got, I believe he won five titles as a player. And then he's got a few more. He's got eight titles. Three as a coach and five as a player. Granted, three of them were with Jordan, and two of them were with San Antonio when David Robinson and Tim Duncan were destroying the league. So his titles definitely come from assistance from other people, but I think this is a guy that's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame.
I think he goes to the Hall of Fame as a coach. As a player, he never averaged more than 9 points per game.
Oh, no, his career is 6 points a game, 1.2 rebounds, and just under 2 assists. So he doesn't have player stats to get there, but
no.
I think when you take the five titles and the knowledge of the game and what he did in the game and combine it with whatever he ends up having when it's all said and done in Golden State, this guy will probably have 10 championships, and he'll probably have a crap ton of wins. I would think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I definitely think as a coach he will go.
Okay. And then the last one for the rapid fire is, this is a guy who I think was 100% on track to go down as one of the greatest players or forwards of his time, but he moved and went to another team to play on a super team, and that's Kevin Love.
Kevin Love.
When he was in Minnesota, if he had kept the pace he did in Minnesota, he would have easily been one of the top five power forwards to ever play the game. And I'm pretty sure he had two games where he had 30-30. Like 30 points and 30 rebounds. He legitimately was insane.
Yeah, when he was the guy, he was something else.
Well, and he was the guy on a terrible team, and he was still really good. So that's what I'm saying. Then he goes to Cleveland, and he just hasn't been there. He hasn't been a factor in this game since.
No, and some of that, I think, is dealing with injuries. The other part is changing a system, going where he's got to play off the ball a lot more, and I don't think that ever really suited him. I mean, let's see what Beeline can do with him this year, but, hey, it might be too late at this point.
No, I would agree. I think he needs to come up with a major turnaround. Otherwise, when the career ends, it's going to be a very hard sell for that man to be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I'm out on him right now, but, hey, I guess he is only, quote-unquote, only 30. So, I mean, in the NBA, he could have 5-6 more good years if he really takes care of himself and he can fix these injury issues. But, I mean, he hasn't played more than 70 games since the 2015-16 season.
Yeah, oh, definitely. All right, well, we're keeping with rapid fire. We got, don't worry, this music lasts for a little while, so we got a minute. But these are the last two. They're both playing, both still in Detroit. One, I think, is too early to call, but I'm still going to put it in anyway. Andre Drummond.
No.
That was pretty easy. I think if he keeps playing the way he does, the numbers will be there. I don't know about the wins and all that, but the numbers and stats-wise will be there to support him being what he was, because there are plenty of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that played on terrible teams and had to do it themselves. So I think the numbers will be there to support him, because the guy averages a double-double right now, and it's, you know, he's still pretty young, pretty relatively, you know, new, and he's got Blake hopefully for a couple years to be able to build around, so we'll see what happens there. I'm going to put that one as a to be determined, but I think there's a chance we could be seeing zero go into the Hall of Fame when it's all said and done.
Oh, I'd be shocked.
You'd be shocked.
I hope so, because that means he will have dramatically improved his game on both sides of the court, and that'd be really nice. But hey, at 25, he's still got a chance.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. The last one, everything has to stay the same here. We can't assume that things are going to turn around and all of a sudden the winds are going to start pouring. So you got to assume the team's going to improve, but not as monumentally as we'd love. That's Matthew Stafford.
No, I don't think Stafford's a Hall of Famer right now. I mean, is he a top five quarterback in the league right now? No. And that's part of my criteria.
Okay.
It stings, but he's a Hall of Very Good.
Well,
he could be on the way of that.
That's fair. I mean, he's going to, by the time it's all said and done, if he doesn't already, he's going to own every Lions record. They're his.
Oh, yeah.
They're his for the taking. I think he already has almost all of them.
Yep, and that's a low bar to clear, though.
It's a low bar to clear, but what I'm saying is he's got the franchise, so he's a Ring of Honor guy, like, you know, right
easily.
Now, if he wants. But what I'm saying is, assuming everything keeps going, he's usually good for 3,000-plus a season. He's probably mm-hmm. good for 25. I don't see him as a 35 to 40 touchdowns a year guy, but he's good for 25. He's improved in the interception area. He does not throw as many picks as he did early on. He's becoming a little more.
Correct.
He's becoming a little more well balanced. I think personally, if everything stays the same, assuming the Lions don't go on a 7-year, 3 championship run and all that, assuming we can at least be competitive in the North, I think Matt Stafford is going to be a late in his like life Hall of Fame kind of guy. He's not going to be in the Hall of Fame when he's 45. He's not like Kurt Warner and all these guys who are Hall of Famers right away. He's gonna have to wait a little bit, but I think number 9 could go to the Hall of Fame if he keeps going in the trend he's going. He's got to be effective. He's got to be efficient. He's gonna be just like Andre Drummond and some other guys who the team's never gonna get you to the Hall of Fame. You have to get yourself to the Hall of Fame.
Man, I got nothing to add. We gotta end on that.
Send on it.
Yeah, that's something to throw out to the fans.
Absolutely. We're going to put that poll out. We definitely are. Russ, you're the stat man. You're smarter than me, and you prove it every time we do one of these shows. Appreciate being on, buddy.
No, it's a blast, man. And, man, I hope you're right, and I hope we can assume that the Lions win a championship. That'd be great.
Even a championship would be great.
Yeah. How about a Super Bowl appearance? That'd be okay.
I'm in for it. And as always, I'm your host, Derek Dorsch. Jay Marcus, if you listened all the way to the end of the show, we missed you today, buddy. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.